This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. This week, we'll visit with a group of young criers. Not babies who are wet and hungry, not spoiled folks who whine and complain, but rather extremely talented young musicians who make up the extraordinary chamber string orchestra called A Far Cry. These 17 criers, as they call themselves, began in the Boston area a decade ago. They started to quickly develop a reputation for outstanding musicianship, paired with adventurous and unique programming, a complete democratic system of inner workings that is truly impressive, and concerts and recordings worth hearing, such as their Grammy-nominated disc with the great clarinetist David Krakauer called Dreams and Prayers, which was also a concert they gave last November at the Williams Center for the Arts at Lafayette College in Easton, PA. A concert we'll broadcast in its entirety tomorrow at noon. You're listening to another of their discs on their Crier Records label, the third section from Arnold Schoenberg's ultra-postmodern romantic work inspired by a poem by Richard Demal, Verklärte Nacht, Transfigured Night. I spoke with three members of A Far Cry when they were up in Easton, PA last fall, founding member cellist Loie Lin, and violinists Miki Sophia Cloud and Alex Fortes. I am here with Surround Sound Radio here. Alex, Miki, and Loie. All three of you are criers. So let's start there. The name of the ensemble, just get that right out of the way so we can move on to other things. How did you come about A Far Cry?
Well, that was decided in actually Jay's old apartment. I think 2 days before the nonprofit deadline, we...
You got to have a name on the... Heard string quartets do this too.
We sat around for a couple of hours. We couldn't come up with anything. And at the last moment, somebody blurted out. I think it was Jay, actually. Just blurted out, A Far Cry! Well, I just sat there, and it stuck. And then from there, it was just that. I think at first, it rubbed some of us a wrong way, because we had another name that we used, and we were called the Mobius Players. It's that strip of piece of paper that...
It only has one side.
So there was a vote, and A Far Cry edged that by just a couple votes or something. So that was it.
Why did this pop into his head?
I think that'd be...
A question for him,
yeah. I think we were all really tired from... like, we had exhausted, yeah, a lot of... Yeah.
I think there are reasons, though, that the name stuck, even if that we don't know where it came from in Jay's head, but we like the fact that it has many different valences, that it's an expression that means nothing like, and we do want every one of our performances and everything that we do to be... in some sense, at least, nothing like something that's existed before. That the way we structure ourselves for ourselves, every performance that we have, we don't want to be just like the one we had last night. And so that's one part of it. And the other part is also the adjectives and nouns involved. And far implies distance, and crying has, again, so many different meanings that are all about the most vulnerable kind of emotions that you can have. And I think that's a lot of why it is meaningful for us.
It allows all of you to be criers, and not in the whiny, pouting sense, but in the artistic sense, which is the only way I know it's that word being used.
Yeah, well, and we really love the idea of also, like, another valence of it is the idea of the town crier.
Yeah.
You know, someone who comes around and to speak what's on their heart and to build community and
everybody's attention.
Yeah, and to communicate in a very open and outreaching way. Right. That was also really important to us.
Before I turn to Mike, I told you we broadcast this group a number of years ago, and I'm saying 6 or 7, which means you were only a few years underway. Now you're at the cusp of the 10th season. Congratulations, first of all. Not every group makes it there. But when you realize that you're now 10 years old, wherever you come in, you were at the beginning of it, right?
Mm-hmm. I joined in the second year.
Second year, Alex?
I joined in the fifth year.
Okay, so good. I'll just coming into it. What's the feeling you have about that? I mean, has it flown by? Or are things going exactly as you plan them? I mean, how are things going with the group as far as what the overall picture was when you got this going? We'll talk about getting it going, but just in general. They're nodding to you, Miggy.
I joined in the second year. I moved, the end of the second year, I moved to Boston, and I had a few friends and acquaintances. I came and saw one of the group's concerts and was really blown away. You know, I have to say, when I kind of did my interview to become a member, I remember I was kind of quiet, and they said, do you have any questions for us? And I had one big question, which was, is this all going to fall apart in a month? I was like, is this still going to be here? You guys look really tired. Are you ready to quit? And then there was a lot of laughter. They said, absolutely not. And it was interesting. Like, I could see that they, my soon-to-be colleagues, were taking this huge leap, pouring in tons of work, tons of unpaid work, actually, and, you know, stringing together a lot of different things to pay the bills and doing this huge push with this faith that there would be a reward and that the next step would come. And I not having bought into the idea yet, was really skeptical, but I saw it happen. And I think I've seen that happen about 4 or 5 times over the past 10 years, where we've hit a point where we keep taking these leaps and kind of trusting that there'll be something to catch us, whether it's artistically, whether it's as an organization, whether it's personally. There is a beautiful culture in this group of taking great risk and putting in the work to give that risk the best possible chance of paying off. And it's been really beautiful seeing it happen over and over again. And now it's the point where I start to feel that hang time, that free fall of taking the leap. I think, remember what happened last time, it'll be okay. And so far, knock on wood, it has been. And I don't think I'd want to be in a group that played it safe all the time. So I really enjoyed that. You know, whether it means when we started, my first year we played 3 concerts, the next year we played 35. That was a huge, because we started working with a manager and touring. Yeah. Then we decided we wanted to really expand and produce our Boston series, and that, you know, grew. Then we wanted to start touring internationally, and we took a European tour. Then we wanted to start our own label, and it was definitely a certain point where we were, like, running on fumes, and then, the Grammy nomination came in, and people in our community started to support our Boston series, you know. So it's been a really beautiful thing to see that faith in each other and what we do be supported, you know, by all the listeners.
We have been asked a few times to go into entrepreneurship education programs, which are popping up in a lot of conservatories around the country. And oftentimes in entrepreneurship education, there's classes on, well, this is how you should build a website, this is how you should write a bio, this is how you should write for grants. And these are all things that all of us wish that we had when we started. But I think that sometimes, because you turn these things into recipes, you miss the point that most of the time entrepreneurship is about not knowing exactly how you're going to do it, but just trying hard and trying again and having the right group of people, which in our group, which I noticed before I was a member, having the right combination of dreamers and realists, people who really are pushing us to take those risks, as well as people who have the organized kind of mind that allows us to take the step-by-step path in order to actually realize those dreams.
Thank you.
From the Grammy-nominated disc on their Crier Records, the CD called Dreams and Prayers, here are my guests, A Far Cry, and their arrangement of music by the 12th century abbess, writer, composer, philosopher, Christian mystic and visionary and polymath, Hildegard von Bingen, her O Ignis Spiritus Paracliti, O Fire of the Spirit.
Thank you.
This might seem an obvious question, but a quartet by nature is what it is. But this began as a string orchestra. Has there ever been thought or talk over the years, as this has happened around the world, where you would add winds, or is it the mindset we are going to stay strings only with guests, and you know, like tonight? But is it always the thought that you're going to stay a string-based group?
Well, I think it's mostly, that question is guided by the repertoire. I think whatever the repertoire is called for, we will make the decision based on that. And we have, I mean, over this past few years, I would say the growth in terms of the programming, it's just been phenomenal. You know, the one true unique thing that I don't think any group in this world has that we have is the ability to curate your own program. And like, for example, the Dreams and Prayers, where else can you really get into the sort of this brainchild of a creation that its DNA is throughout all the pieces, and it's just such a special thing, you know, to play. I think Alex and Mickey said it so beautifully, but like the reach of this group has grown so much. And when we started in year one, I think if you asked any of us if we would be doing this now, I don't think we would have thought we could be. We would be. And
well, I think you've made some decisions, really interesting, intelligent decisions in some areas. One was, as I was first going to touch on, which is repertoire. Mm-hmm. Balancing old music, new music. How do you come to that balance? New works, commissioning works. I mean, this has all been part of the group. I mean, repertoire is one of your calling cards for its interesting nature and uniqueness at times. So talk about the repertoire choices.
One thing that, like Alex was saying, when I first started playing with the group, it was as a guest artist, and then I became a member a few months after. But one thing that was really immediately apparent to me was this was a group that made decisions based on artistic and idealistic values. Mm-hmm. And that they were a group of people that had this voracious appetite for music and for life and for humanity. And so, of course, we were going to play all the music. You know, of course we were going to play medieval chant to Beatles covers, to commissions, to Beethoven, to Tchaikovsky serenade. Of course we were going to play everything we're passionate about, to like fiddling music, to...
Well, that wasn't a given for a string orchestra 30, 40 years ago.
Right, but given this group of personalities, it was very clear from the beginning that, and it's interesting, in the press sometimes we've been introduced as a new music group when we've been doing a lot of new music projects, or an early music group when we've done a Baroque project and all like worked on playing, you know, with Baroque bows and some with gut strings. So it's been interesting, but I mean, whatever we're passionate about as musicians, we try to go to the hilt on, and there are always members within the group that have specialties and particular passions in one area. And part of our structure that's so beautiful is the idea that, you know, one person can come and say, you know, hey, I'm a Baroque specialist, and let me lead us in this project, and we all completely follow and support and give our all to make that happen.
I want to get to the democratic nature of this group, but first of all, I mean, performing outside of yourselves with other artists, you've got the great cornetist David Krakauer on this program. You have even performed with artists outside the musical world, artists from other disciplines and all that stuff. So that too, all since the beginning and over all these years, it's always been no problem in bringing in other artists, other performers on stage to be with you, to collaborate with. Collaboration has always been an important issue.
I think we've been lucky that people have been so gracious from day one about supporting us accomplish what we believe in and what we're trying to do. And the thing is that we're trying to do something very, very specific, and they understand that, and to really just give us everything they have, you know. And we've just been very fortunate from day one, and everything we've dreamed of has, we're just so lucky that.
But did you seek out collaborators, or now is it the reverse where they're seeking you out? I mean, sometimes that just flows the other way.
It's been both. You know, I mean, I think Loie hit it on the head. We would have never gotten to where we are if we hadn't had artists that we admire and respect and dreamed of working with, whether as collaborators or in the beginning as coaches, you know, come in and work with us and just influence us and lend us, you know, their inspiration. You know, we started off playing like with soloists, and then over time, yeah, collaborators have become a bigger and bigger part of what we do, and we've collaborated with dance companies and with, you know, various other art disciplines as well.
At the very heart of what we do is collaboration with each other. Mm-hmm. I think that's always been one of the primary values that we hold in terms of our own organization, and that's a lot of what we were talking about before in terms of programming, about having any one person be able to bring their dream program and then advocate for it and convince the rest of the group to go along with it. And that extends to collaborators outside the group, both musical collaborators such as David Krakauer, who was the original idea of the program. What pieces we were playing came before we started working with him, but this program that we're performing tonight and that we recorded would have never been what it is without the contributions that he made in terms of not only his own musicality, which is incredible, and his own knowledge of klezmer and jazz and clarinet, but also his valuing grit and the importance of really committing absolutely to every moment of a performance in a way that we also believe in, but there's a certain charisma that comes from that collaboration. And so it's made us grow, and hopefully he's also gained something from his collaboration with us.
The program that makes up my guests, the String Chamber Group of Far Cry's Grammy-nominated CD, Dreams and Prayers, was what they presented at the Williams Center at Lafayette College in Easton, PA last fall. A concert will broadcast in its entirety at noon tomorrow. The major work on this program is The Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind by Argentinian composer Osvaldo Galeoff, and it featured a Far Cry's special guest, the incredible clarinetist David Krakauer. Here they both are in the first movement after the prelude, this titled Agitato.
Thank you.
So you mentioned collaborating with each other. This whole democratic thing you got going in this group. Not unique. Other groups have to have this, even down to the string quartet or the trio. You guys, I'm not saying you carry it to a further degree, but take us through it. So a piece comes into the ensemble to perform. How does it work? Someone brings it in, person A brings it in.
Well, that's already step five.
Okay. I thought I was a little bit ahead of things. So take us back to step one. So how does it work?
Well, so we're an ensemble. We're also a presenting organization, and we're also a nonprofit, right? So let's say we want to play a piece on our Boston series, right? So we have our presenting organization hat on. Our nonprofit organization structure rotates. So every year, our tour manager is a player, is a crier. Our marketing chair is a crier. Our sort of, we call it our artistic axle, the person who forces us to make decisions and make sure that all our artistic ducks are in a row is a crier. Some of our development officers are, you know, education. All of these are actually performers as well in the group. So our artistic axle, so a person, the person who forces us to make these decisions, sends out an email saying, outlining this process for programming, and calls for entries. And so we all, you know, submit our programs, and some of us will collaborate on a program, and but we'll all submit them, and they go on this giant Google
vault.
Yeah, we call it the vault, but it goes on this huge Google presentation, and we're all, you know, asked to listen to as many pieces as possible and to study all of the submissions, and then we take several votes, narrowing it down before we even come to these twice a year retreats we have, where we then get together and each of the still standing programs is on a piece of paper that are, you know, taped all over wherever the space we are. In the winter it's a Vermont barn, and in the summer it's a music camp we take over in Maine, Kneisel Hall. And then we hash it out, we debate it, we listen, we edit each other's work, and at the very end of each of those retreats we try to have a whole season set that, you know, includes some programs that are better for a huge hall that, you know, like we're trying to pack the seats, and some that are for, you know, like a more avant-garde audience. We have several different venues we play in, so, you know, we try to curate for the whole season. But at that point, we've decided what pieces we're going to play.
And we frequently workshop.
I had no idea.
Yeah, we workshop these programs, and sometimes it's, hey, you know, I really love, you know, this program, except we've already played 5 Corelli concertos in the last 2 years. Can we do something else here, or something like that? Or one of the most interesting things, actually, with regard to Dreams and Prayers, is the piece that we start with, which is a version of a chant by Hildegard von Bingen that we're playing as unison violins. The person who's leading the program today said, back when the program was first proposed, he was so skeptical that that would ever work.
He fought hard against it. He fought vehemently. And again, he fought again when we were going to record it. And now he's leading it tonight because he feels so strongly about it.
The program X gets accepted. Because what you just said, Alex, like the person who's leading the Hildegard tonight, am I right about this, may not lead it in the next, or... You guys completely keep moving around once you get into the performance mode, correct? Well, and it's expected, and it's wanted, and it's...
When it finally comes time at the beginning of the year that this is going to be performed, where are these programs, and then comes the logistics of asking which choirs are actually available to play this. And then so we might play the program at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, and it would be great if those choirs could play both of those, the same people, but realistically that's hard for that to happen. So...
Well, we balance a lot of logistic concerns, such as, you know, how can we maintain a certain amount of consistency that doesn't mean we're reinventing the wheel, with the idea that there's benefits to different perspectives on the same piece, and also a general value that there should be an equivalent amount of leadership shared among all members of the group.
But being conductorless... I'll let you go ahead, Miki. But being conductorless, you've got real logistic things on stage. So whoever is leading the piece from whatever instrument, or if the leadership passes within a piece, all those people have to know what cues you have, and this, I mean, you're doing eye cues and all kinds of stuff, I assume.
Generally, for any one rehearsal period, we keep the same leaders for any one piece. So, for example, for this tour, we're doing, you know, 5 or 6 concerts, but each piece in the program has a different set of leaders, but those leaders remain consistent for the entire tour. Now, those leaders, for example, are not all the same as who recorded it 3 years ago, and those were not the same as the people who premiered this program the year before. Some of them are the same and some of them have changed. And so it's kind of interesting, you know.
That's part of the beauty of the...
And
part of the growth of the group, how we've evolved in such a way that it allows for a very unique kind of democratic growth.
From yet another disc on my guests, a Far Cry's Crier Records label, this pairing two works by young American composers. One, a runner-up for the Pulitzer Prize, Andrew Norman's The Companion Guide to Rome, but we'll hear from the other work, a work by Ted Hearn, his Law of Mosaics, the third movement called Climactic Moments from Adagio for Strings and the Four Seasons, slowed down and layered on top of one another. Self-explanatory, performed by my guests today, A Far Cry.
Thank you.
Music of American composer Todd Hearn from his work called Law of Mosaics, performed by my guests today, the ensemble of Far Cry, as we visit with founding cellist Louie Lin and violinists Alex Fortes and Miki Sophia Cloud. And for such an impressive democratic group, I had seen something on the internet listing Miki as concertmaster.
No, I moved from Boston to New York about 5 years ago, and because so much of what we do is collective and democratic, you know, I had to be able to explain to people that I was hoping would hire me what I have been doing. You know, that sometimes I'm concertmaster, sometimes I'm principal second, sometimes I'm last chair, and I love every one of those roles. And so the best way I could communicate that was to just explain that, you know, I have played concertmaster of this group before, and I happened to get a good review when I did it, so I just mentioned the review. That was my way of saying that I do have that kind of experience if you would like to hire me for that kind of thing.
And that's the way it's with everybody moves around to all the different chairs in the group.
Yeah.
All of the people here tonight are playing concertmaster or principal cello, as well as last chair cello, last chair this concert.
Yeah.
So. I don't know if this is so much a question, just a statement, but one of the major supporters you guys have had, or the connective tissue you have, is to the New England Conservatory. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's really important that you've got that connection, I would think, that you can tie into a major educational institution. It's been invaluable, I think, especially getting to the 10-year.
Well, we're involved with the preparatory department there.
Yeah. You also have done some things which would go to PEG extreme. I'm thinking about memorizing pieces, which you have done, which may not seem that crazy, but for an entire ensemble to memorize a piece. I saw Tafel Music do it once in Canada, but I've never seen another ensemble memorize. And then you even did once where you performed with your eyes closed as a kind of an experiment. Did you not?
Oh, well, that was a rehearsal.
It was a rehearsal, but still, just the fact of wanting to do it.
Yeah, anyway.
Is this just, you have the camps and all this stuff. Is this just, it's not a bonding thing, but is this just so that you can all have a deeper experience? Or is this somebody's like, lark, hey, let's try to, I mean.
Well, like I said, I think if there's one thing that defines this group is this constant desire to continue to grow and evolve. And so we wanted to celebrate our 10th anniversary by, well, we're doing it a lot of different ways, but I think the obvious way would be to make a lot of really big, splashy concerts and to, you know, push the envelope even further in terms of repertoire and have even bigger soloists. And one thing we really wanted to do was for our opening concert in Jordan to go back to the most basic Warhorse string orchestra piece, Tchaikovsky Serenade, and to really go back to the basics and to really learn it in a deeper way and to push ourselves artistically and to push the depth of our artistry. We talked about this idea of, like, you've been a bakery that got more, you know, traction because you baked really beautiful artisanal sourdough bread. Okay, well then over time maybe you start putting cranberries in it and you start putting pecans in it and you start making cheese loaves and all that stuff. But sometimes it's really good to just go back to that, you know, that starter.
The original recipe.
Yeah, go to your roots.
And try it again, like kind of reinvent how you're making that bread so that you make sure that the base that supports everything else is as good as it possibly can be.
As you keep saying that we want to keep going and we've mentioned the 10-year mark, what do you project for the group? I mean, you all didn't know if it would last past a certain amount of time, whether you found it, Louie, or whatever. But also mix in with that the fact that you talked about connecting with New England Conservatory. I assume you also want to grow your audience to newer ears, younger ears, whatever. So mix that in as, where do you want to go in the next few years with this group?
Well, it should be a cornerstone of not just music, but I think we see ourselves not just musicians, but we have an important role in the cultural life, in the life of human beings, that when we come together, what is that saying? The sum of the parts is greater,
the whole
is greater than the sum of the parts. And I think when we can demonstrate that because we believe in that, I think it can be so powerful when tied in how we make music.
Is the dynamic fulfillment of this group enough that it's going to keep going for quite a while? I mean, you're always going to have changes in personnel, of course. But
that's the hope.
That's the hope. I mean, I think it's an uncertain world, so it's hard to say, well, this is where we'll be in 10 years without, because we had no clue where we'd be 10 years ago. And I think there's something really powerful about accepting that uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And also the variety of the group is the people in it. And each of us probably has a different answer in terms of what we want to be as musicians, as citizens, and what the group means to us for those reasons. And so I think we all want the group to represent some of the most vulnerable communication we can have with each other, with our community, and the power of that fact, of that fact of performing and rehearsing music in this way that tries to delve to deeper truths or so on, also has other reverberations in terms of education, in terms of
the reach,
completely different resonating disciplines. Like, we've talked about trying to find science departments and talk about the neuroscience of music or the acoustics of music making along with organizational psychology. I mean, there's just so many different, I mean, those are things that I'm interested in. I think Loi and Miki have different answers, as well as the 16 other people.
Well, continued success. You're going to go in a lot of different directions, knowing you've got all these minds working in this democratic bubble of trying to figure things out. I close all my Cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two questions. So this first question you can all answer very quickly, and that's that if you could chat like we've been chatting, but with someone from the past, something you never had a chance to, what's the first name that pops into your head? Don't think about it too long, you get swamped. But
with somebody that...
from the past, that you never had a chance to talk to, who'd you want to talk with?
Beethoven.
I think right now, Jesus.
Okay. This is an interesting tea party you're going to.
Between Ben Franklin and Schubert.
We should drill down on that, but we won't. I've had everything over the years, from Jesus to Groucho Marx and everything in between. Final question, and maybe don't answer it individually because you're only three of a larger group, but you mentioned these retreats you go on. So final question is always, I ask people, it's a non-musical question. You're always very busy with music. Your lives are filled with music. When you have to get away from music, what do you do? Pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, but that can take you away. When you guys are together as a group, do you do anything that's non-musical that...
There's an easy answer to this.
Okay. What do you do as a group that's... We would have people scratching their heads that you were actually musicians.
We cook, and we eat, and we drink whiskey. I think those are the three things that we do the most, yeah.
There's some amazing cooks in this group.
Three members of the very special String Chamber Orchestra of Far Cry, founding cellist Loi Lin, violinists Miki Sophia Cloud, and Alex Fortes. You can find out all you want to know about this ensemble and check out their recordings at their website, afarcry.org. The concert they gave last fall at the Williams Center for the Arts at Lafayette College in Easton, PA, is the same program on their Grammy-nominated CD called Dreams and Prayers, and features as special guest the extraordinary clarinetist David Krakauer. This will be our noontime broadcast tomorrow, and it features music of Hildegard von Bingen, Mehmet Ali Sanlıkol, Osvaldo Golioff, and Beethoven's Heiliger Dankgesang from his string quartet Opus 132 in a Far Cry's arrangement. I'll leave you with this ensemble with two other guest artists, guitarist Jason Vio and bandoneon player Julian Labro, in the final movement and the season all of us can smell at this point, Spring or Primavera Porteño from Astor Piazzolla's The Four Seasons of Buenos Aires. The guest artists are joined by my guests today, A Far Cry. And as always, I'm glad you were in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.